It's Offsides with Mark and Lonzo right here on ESPN Upstate. Great to be here with you guys on a Friday Eve edition of the show. All right, so I've been telling you about this. I'm so glad that we get to do this. It is such a good feeling to be able to, in some small way, give back. And honestly, it feels like the least we can do under the circumstances. Andrew McCullough is a senior from Greer High School who was co-captain of the varsity wrestling team. He's an all-region wrestler, and he finished his senior season with a 53-9 overall record. Andrew McCullough joins us right now on the show. Andrew, you are our senior sports spotlight of the day. Congratulations on that. Andrew, how are you doing, pal?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing?
Whoa. We've got a grown man on the phone. Andrew, your voice sounds very different. Your voice sounds very different from the other ones, man. Now, listen, we were having this debate, Andrew. We had on a couple of days ago a wrestler who wrestled in the 145 weight class. And we were kicking around, I'm 6 foot 200 pounds. Could I beat a 145-pound 17-year-old wrestler? And Rob Brown and Lonzo said absolutely not. I believe Rob Brown, who's the host of the show before mine, Andrew, said that when he was 25, he lost to a 24-year-old woman wrestler. And he didn't know what he was doing, and she did, and it was over real, real fast, he said. So, Andrew, what is it about wrestlers that makes them so tough to where a layman like me would have no shot against somebody like you?
I don't really know. I guess it would have to do with the young age. That would definitely be
a big factor. Oh, we got an age joke here. Do you see this? We got an age joke. But he's dropping the age jokes on me early. I'm just messing with you, pal. Hey, congratulations on everything you've done, man. I mean, tell me what it's like to be 53-9 and a co-captain of the varsity wrestling team at Greer High School.
I mean, it definitely means a lot. It's pretty big accomplishment that I'm very proud of. It's nice to be able to place that in the state, just representing the high school.
Hey, Andrew, I have a question for you. So 53-9, man, that is amazing. Was there that one guy this year or the last couple years that you struggled with that you finally got past, or was there a guy that got you every time when you were on the mat?
Well, actually, this year I had lost to two separate guys in the season, and then I had ended up beating both of them later on in the season. One of them was at the Upper State Tournament, and the other was at the State Tournament.
You know, it's just tremendous what you've been able to do, placing third in the 4A State Tournament. You're also a member of the National Honor Society Beta Club and on the yearbook staff. Andrew, I'm reading your resume, and I feel very inferior right now, sir. I've got to be honest with you. I feel very, very inferior at all of your accomplishments here. What was it like starting as a freshman, getting to start as a freshman on the wrestling team? I imagine there's not a lot of guys that get to do that.
Yeah, it was pretty tough. I only came out of that season with 8 wins. It's all just learning process at being that young, wrestling a lot of upperclassmen.
Now, I got a message before you came on today that if I ask you what weight class you wrestled in, that you're going to tell me 170. But this person also let me know that in previous years you wrestled at 138 and also still could have beaten me those years. That's a big jump. That's a big jump, 138 to 170. How did you make that?
Well, after my junior year, I started going to the gym pretty often on top of eating a lot more, obviously, and that it just kind of happened.
What's your best weight? What's the weight that's most natural for you?
Probably 170 felt pretty natural. I had to lose a few pounds to make it, but after practices got longer and tougher, it was definitely easy to manage. So I did feel pretty natural weighing in that much.
So when you came in, jumping a couple weight classes from one year to the next, what did the coach say to you? Did he get on you, or is it just like, we need to adjust to this new weight?
They wanted me to adjust to it. I definitely wasn't used to moving around 170 pounds as opposed to moving around 138 the years before. So I had to took a little bit for me to get in shape, but the coaches, most of them welcomed it because we did have a lot of younger guys joining the team who were around 138 that weight class. So it did help the team being at the weight class that I was.
So Mark doesn't know a lot about high school wrestling. I wrestled, and my son won. He won 50-something in his senior season at 205, which was about 8 years ago. But he went from hardly winning at all to getting to a senior year and just dominating. Can you explain the difference between the speed and strength at 138 and the speed and strength at 170?
Well, at 138, a lot of the guys are going to be extremely athletic, being just smaller. But at 170, I've ran into some guys who are pretty strong, but they are not as quick as the lower weight classes. But they're both every weight class is difficult in their own way.
Andrew McCullough is our senior sports spotlight of the day today. Andrew, what is your best sports memory wrestling at Greer High School?
Definitely the moment after I had placed third in the state, just walking off the mat and seeing both my parents there and, you know, hugging them. That was a pretty important moment to me.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And so they've been there to really kind of support you, I guess, throughout your career thus far, huh?
Yes, they've been there. I think they've only missed one match through all of my high school career.
Andrew, how did the current situation with the pandemic, how has it affected you and your family?
There's a lot of people, a lot of friends that I would only get to see at school that I'm not able to see, obviously. There's only a handful of people that I still get to see regularly because of that. So, I mean, that's been a tough change.
You know what, man? I commend all of you guys for what you've done and what you've been through and how you continue to hold your heads high. And Andrew, you have such a bright future, man. You are moving on to sit the Citadel in the fall. Tell me about that college decision, man. That's an interesting one.
I have a friend there who's going to be a rising senior, and he kind of sparked that interest for me. And he'll talk to me about everything the school's about, and that the more I learn about it, the more I get interested in going there and the brotherhood that's made. And it just felt home after I visited there a couple times.
Do you have any plans to continue wrestling in college?
No, I just wanted to focus on academics. Obviously, the Citadel being a pretty tough school with everything going on there, I just wanted to be able to focus on that alone.
Understand completely, man. I understand completely. And what about the military element appeals to you about going to the Citadel?
I don't have any plans to go in the military myself, but I think that just everything that they put you through going to school there is definitely going to help me when entering the real world, living on my own, just help me being able to get through anything that comes my way.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Andrew McCullough joining us on the show. All right, Andrew. So if let's say that you had 1 week to get me to train me so that I could beat somebody in wrestling that was 5 years younger and 20 pounds heavier than I am. I'm about 200 pounds and I'm 42 years old. So I have to beat somebody who is 220 in weight, and they're 37 years old. If I gave you 1 week with me, could we win that bout or no? What are you saying?
I think so. I have faith in you. I think we can get it done.
I think your faith is misplaced in me, Andrew. I got to be honest with you, man. I think it's completely misplaced, man. That's outstanding. Of all the sports choices that you had, Andrew, why wrestling? What about that sport in specifically really grabbed you?
Well, I had a lot of friends that were on the team, and also were just making new friendships with other people on the team that I didn't have, that I didn't find anywhere else. But I liked the tough practices that we had. Also, I mean, it's pretty satisfying after getting through a tough match, getting your hand raised. It's very unique.
Now, I don't know much about your high school coach, but you just said the practices were pretty brutal. What made them so challenging?
Well, we have the Greer program has been kind of small and it's grown, so we practice in a classroom, so it gets pretty stuffy in there, and gets everybody in there is drenched in sweat by the end of practices. But he does condition us pretty hard, and he just wants us to make sure that we wrestle the best that we can.
Yeah, and it sounds like he's did a great job with you guys in terms of your accomplishments. Andrew, as we let you go here today, is there anything that you would like to say to perhaps the 2020 senior class, kids surrounding throughout the upstate here, that that have had their senior seasons cut short, that were not able to walk for graduation, that were not able to go to their senior prom, that were not able to just, like you said, spend the time with their classmates to finish their senior year? Is there any message you'd like to send to the to your fellow seniors here in the upstate?
I would just tell them that they should just look for the good outcome through this, if any. But there's definitely, I've had some good come through this. I've been able to hang out with my family more and just grow that relationship with them, help out around the house that I probably would not have been able to do otherwise. I would just look for the good in the small things.
That's exactly what you do, Andrew. That is exactly what you do. Brother, I'm really proud of you, man. I'm really proud of you. You've had an incredible high school career. You're a really good kid, National Honor Society, Beta Club, on the yearbook staff, going to the Citadel in the fall. Andrew, we're proud of you, man. We would love to keep up with you and follow your immediate future here at the Citadel. And just congratulations on triumphing in a really, really difficult situation, man. We're pulling for you, all right?
Thank you.
You got it. Andrew McCullough, graduating senior, Greer High School, four-year starter, co-captain of the varsity wrestling team. All he did was post a 53-9 record. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. This is our senior sports spotlight segment. And it's we bring it to you each and every day, 4 p.m., and it's a beautiful thing that we do here. Beautiful thing that we do, and happy to be a part of it with you. All right, coming up next, Josh Pate, 24/7 Sports, will give us an update on the landscape in college football possibly returning. That's next. This is Offsides, ESPN Upstate. It's Offsides with Mark and Lonzo right here on ESPN Upstate. You know, I have this strong feeling about life where I feel like if you can't be happy for other people's success, that you'll never have any of your own. And for the longest time, I felt like, my dad said, Mark, there's this guy you got to check out. He's in Georgia. And my dad is not, honestly, not the most internet savvy guy. But he came across Josh Pate, and he came across Josh Pate's Late Kick podcast, which was on YouTube at the time. And my dad said to me, Mark, this guy's one of the best guys that I've seen. So I watched it, I agreed with it, and I'm just like, man, You know, you have those best kept secret places in town, right? And you almost don't want the word to get out about those places, because then they won't be your best kept secret place anymore. It was only a matter of time before somebody picked him up because his content was outstanding. And if, in case you're wondering, Josh, I am available to represent you now as an agent. Josh Pate, 24/7 Sports, National Director of Video, 24/7 Sports, widely made that addition. And Josh is blowing up right now because the content is outstanding. Josh, great to be joined by you as always, my friend. How are you?
Mark, I'm dead serious, man. I've not heard someone talk up something that much since I talked Smitty's Boiled Peanuts down in Columbus, Georgia, up like that. Because they used to sit on the corner of Veterans Parkway and Double Churches Road, which means nothing to your audience. But he was the Boiled Peanut guy. He worked out of a truck before food trucks were cool. And no one wanted to tell their friends about him, because everyone wanted to have the secret Boiled Peanut spot. It was like there was some moonshine still turned into a Boiled Peanut spot way out in the woods. And finally, Smitty went mainstream, and he set up on a real popular street corner, and then everyone was disappointed because it was still the same product, but now everyone knew about it. It wasn't as fun anymore.
There was a level of fun to you, Josh, when it was small-town Georgia, but really, really good content. It was like, whoa. It's like, I don't know, man. I don't know why we – The moral of the story is there's so much great talent in this country in a lot of the smaller markets. And, brother, I'm glad that 24/7 Sports recognized you. There's a lot of people. I get asked all the time, Josh, you know, like, how did you get your break? What happened? Can we ask you that question, Josh? Because you were a news anchor in Georgia. You were doing, I think, your podcast in addition to that on YouTube, which was really slickly produced. So what happened? What was your big break that happened very recently here?
Well, you know, I need to tell that story one day in a long form. It would probably make a good podcast. But the kind of Cliff Notes version is I was doing nothing in media. I was just listening to it every day, and I wanted to get in. And I got a break there in Columbus to get on radio. And then I got a break to be put on radio. And then from being on radio, a general manager in Columbus who ran a TV station there, the NBC affiliate there, WLTZ in Columbus, he called me up out of the blue. I'd never met him before. And he said, hey, do you want to be the driver on this vehicle of an idea I have? I want to put a college football show on every night. So we did that on TV, and it eventually transitioned to I made it my own, and I wanted to go digital with it for obvious reasons. And so simultaneously, I was a sports anchor, elevated to news anchor, and there came a time where I was going to have to make a decision. And there was a contract extension in front of me, and it would have been a lot more guaranteed money to be in the news anchor business, but I would not have been able to produce my own content independently. And so what I did was I struck a deal with them. It was very, very risky financially at the time to do an independent contractor status. I would anchor news for them for a set, very low rate per day. But in exchange, I wanted to be able to use their facilities to produce and distribute my own content, which to me was a multi-million dollar deal. I don't think they looked at it that way, but that's how I was able to put a product up that looked like it was so highly produced, because it was highly produced, because I was using a full TV station's infrastructure to do it. And then from there, I was contacted by Shannon Terry, who is the CEO of 24/7 Sports, and he said, I don't even know what exactly it is we want to do. I just know that I want you to do it. Can you come? And I said, yes, I can. And so I got here in January. But one of the caveats I've always had, and it has been a seamless transition and everyone here has been great, is I wanted to keep that feel you're talking about. I wanted to keep the very humble but also very authentic, very granular, ground-based, nuanced alternative media feel. I didn't want it to look like an ESPN show, all due respect to the guys in Bristol. I didn't want it to look like what you could already find everywhere else. I wanted it to be unique because that's what I like and that's what I know that our audience likes.
So the CEO of 24/7 Sports, did you know him previously? He just happened to find you, stumble upon you?
That's basically it, yeah. Now, I've known his name for quite a while. I mean, Shannon Terry is a pretty big name. If you followed the advent of Rivals.com and the sell of that to Yahoo Sports, and then the rise of 24/7, and then the acquisition of that by CBS. And I followed that just because I'm a diehard recruiting fan.
Sure.
But at the same time, I've always felt that there's a lot more potential to this brand than just strictly recruiting. That's always going to be the name of the game here, but you can do a lot of stuff, like, for example, what we're doing now. And I'll tell you this, Mark, we have national meetings every Tuesday morning where so many talented people are throwing out so many great ideas, and you're trying to put landing gears on as many of those ideas as you can to not only make them be able to fly, but make them be able to take off and land too. So we got so many things in the works right now that I don't honestly think we've scratched the surface of the potential of what we're going to do here.
Really exciting stuff. Josh Pate joining us here on the show. All right, Josh. So, you know, today's big topic is obviously, are we going to have fans in the stands? Are we not? It seemed a couple weeks ago. Isn't it amazing how this thing is just evolving every single week? There's so much that's happened since the last time we spoke to you just 7 days ago today. But now the big topic is, you know, we were resigned to the fact, hey, just give us college football. We'll accept no fans. And now what we're seeing is, hey, maybe do we have to make this concession now? Ohio State today, 20 to 22,000 fans possible. If progress is made, maybe 40 to 50,000 fans possible. What are you hearing, Josh, as it pertains to the fans attending games this fall?
It feels like it's the opposite of what we had a couple of months ago. A couple of months ago, it was almost like we were witnessing a race to the bottom of who can be the most morbid in their outlook first. And so you had one governor saying, well, we're going to be shut down through the end of the month. And then another governor, hey, we're going halfway through the summer. And then some other governor said, screw it. We're just closed through 2030. And so now you've seen the pendulum come the other way. And it's funny. We were just talking last week. Last Thursday, you had me on this show. And what were we talking about? We were talking about the Pac-12 potentially ceasing to exist if they were going down the route that they sounded like they were going down. A week later, you got Gavin Newsom out there in California saying, oh, I don't know what you guys are talking about. We're going to have football this fall. We're going to be fine. Everything's going to be fine. And so now it feels like you're in a race that I'm more comfortable with, a race back to the top of you got someone saying, hey, maybe we'll have sporadic fans. And then someone else is going to say, as you said, you see the trend starting to develop, 20,000, 25,000, 50,000. The point is, again, just like last week, we're still in May. And so if we're already heading in this direction now, then we get June and we get July. And also keep this in mind too, Mark, if we're talking about how many fans we can admit, that's not a static decision that you make in July and you can't evolve and adjust with. It could be that we get 3 weeks into the season and then people get comfortable opening up 80% or 100% capacity. So it's just a welcome relief to hear things heading in the direction that I hoped they would head. I'm still of the opinion that I need to sit here and just shrug my shoulders and say, I don't know. I'll just see what it is when we get there.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, though. But I'll tell you, you know, we have collectively just been beaten down now for a few months. And we don't need much right now, Josh, to make us happy. And today's trickle was the statement from Ohio State, right? It's just, well, we really could have fans. And then you're thinking to yourself, well, 20,000 fans, that wouldn't sound too bad on TV, right? I watched soccer last week, Josh, Bundesliga. It kind of sadly to me felt like I was watching a practice when I was watching it. That's you know, I thought NASCAR obviously comes off so much better sans fans. Golf the same, UFC almost the same there. But I thought soccer, it just, man, the atmosphere in those European stadiums is what is really what draws you in. 22,000 fans, Josh, that they can make an atmosphere, can they not?
Well, I'll tell you exactly what you can equate it to. We've already seen it. I don't know how they do it in the Carolinas, but I know where I'm from. Like in the state of Georgia, you have the state championship, high school state championship games. They had them at the Georgia Dome for a long time. They have them at what used to be Turner Field now. But over in the state of Alabama, they will rotate between Jordan-Hare Stadium at Auburn, Bryant-Denny Stadium in Alabama. And that's the kind of crowd you get there. You get anywhere between 8 and 20,000 fans in the stands, depending on how big the school is. You get those 7A matchups in the state of Alabama, you get 25,000 people, 30,000 people in a college stadium. And, yeah, I mean, if you watch those games on TV, I've been to several of those games in person. I mean, it's certainly not 87,000 or 100,000 people, respectively, but it's also a far cry from what you're talking about, and that being a feeling of just a practice environment. And I've seen some of the stuff you're talking about, and you're right. It's like you feel like you need to whisper, like no one's supposed to be making noise. It's very surreal.
By the way, Josh, I was getting jealous of your Matthew McConaughey gets, so I had to try to trump you with a pizza delivery guy this week. I don't know if you saw that or not. Yeah,
that was money. Oh, that was – I cannot believe – you saw my retweet. I cannot believe that. How in the world – I'll ask you now. We welcome in Mark Ryan, and the first question I have for you, Mark, how did you guys lock that down?
Yeah. Listen, man, I wish it was some really crazy fancy story, but I started calling around. I just said, I had this idea Sunday night. I said, what if I just start calling around pizza places in Park City, right? I'm just gonna make some phone calls. I got hung up on three different times, Josh. No, I'm not. I don't want to lose my job, and I don't want to talk to you. Click. And I was like, wow, okay. And then I decided, well, okay, I can't get anyone from a Park Place pizza shop. I'll get a host from Salt Lake City. And we did, and he was great. And then about 4 hours after that, Josh, he said, Mark, you're not going to believe this. We have a guy called in today that said he was the Michael Jordan pizza maker, and unbelievably, through our research, we believe he checks out. Would you like to vet him yourself? Called the guy, Josh, vetted him for about 15 minutes, felt like he checked out as well. The next morning, I called four or five different Park City pizza parlors again, and two of them knew that this was the guy. They said it was somewhat of an urban legend, and that, you know, this is the guy, and people in this area know the guy, and they know that he's the guy that made the pizza. So, in the end, going back 23 years, Josh, can I absolutely, positively, blue check mark verify that that's the guy? No. But from people in that area, and the guy was a really upstanding, honest person, we thought he was the guy, and he came on the show, man. Really kind of a neat thing how that developed, and to be one of the first that had him was just awesome, you know?
One of my favorite parts about having any kind of access, not to the pizza world, I guess, like you had, but having any kind of access to, like, college football trainers or people in the communications industry, they have those kinds of stories. You'll never hear them. They can't talk about it anyway, but even if they could, they wouldn't tell them. Like, for example, you'll hear these urban legends in a rivalry game of, did one team have the other team's transmissions tapped? Could they hear the headsets from press box to field? Because, you know, we were getting blown out in the first quarter, then we suspected something and we changed the routing. I don't know how that stuff works. And then all of a sudden, they didn't have an answer for us the final three quarters. There are stories like that for every single minute in a 24-hour day if you find the right people. I don't care if I'm being interviewed. If someone has that kind of story, I just sit back, I put my hands on the back of my head, and I'm happy to listen all day.
You know, it's funny, man, what you just mentioned. The first question I asked him was just, tell us your story. And I shut the heck up for 5 minutes, Josh. You know, I just wanted the story. Give this story to our audience. As we let you go today, Josh, I do want to say I opened the show today by saying that, in my opinion, Clemson has become the number one national brand in all of college football. 16 different states encompassed the 2020 recruiting class that led all of college football. This year, 10 commitments, 10 different states, none from the state of South Carolina. My top five national brands in college football today: 5 Texas, 4 LSU, 3 Alabama, 2 Notre Dame, 1 Clemson. Am I in the ballpark here, Josh, with Clemson becoming a top national brand?
If we're talking recruiting brand, then I certainly think you are. If we were talking about just college football brands, I think you need more longevity on the Clemson run of success, because you got to have more people. To me, you have to have more people coast to coast hating you. And I don't think Clemson's run right now, as impressive as it's been, it hasn't been a decade like Alabama's. It hasn't been extended like even Ohio State's, or it hasn't been decades long in the past like Notre Dame's, to where you get legitimate Miami to Seattle, L.A. to New York, and everywhere in between, finding people that hate you. Now, South Carolina fans despise them, and there may be some Alabama fans, there may be some pockets of folks in the Southeast that despise them, but I don't know if you go to like Reno, Nevada or Fresno, California, and you say Clemson football, I don't think they move the hatred needle out there. And hatred, contrary to popular belief, it's a wonderful thing. The more folks hate you, the more you're doing something right in our business, Mark, or in the world of college football. But when you're talking recruiting, you're right, man. What they're doing is insane, and certainly they're not done in this cycle yet.
That is certainly the case. And if hate gets you a long way, I would be a millionaire by this point, Josh. Josh Pate is the National Director of Video for 24/7 Sports. Always appreciate it, Josh. Thanks so much, pal. Continued success here moving forward, all right?
All right, guys. Take care.
All right. Josh Pate at Late Kick Josh on Twitter. Each and every week you can hear Josh Pate on this particular station at 4:20 in the afternoon. All right. Coming up next on the show, We open the show back up. I know we've had a couple back-to-back interviews here, but we open the show back up to ask you this question. What is your all-time worst stadium experience? I want to hear from you. 71307 is the text line. Lonzo will share his. I'll share mine with you as well. This is Offsides. Mark and Lonzo, ESPN Upstate. You know, it's funny. I heard Robin Diesel talking about this yesterday, and then by chance, I had a buddy of mine in the business text me last night the same thing, and he said, "Mark, what is your worst stadium experience?" And I said, "You know what, man? I'll have to think about that." And I want to throw it to you guys as well right now, because you know when I asked that question to you, is it not true that the worst stadium experience you've ever had, doesn't it immediately come to mind? It's one of those crystal memories, right? Like, you know where you were when this happened, right? Big time events. It's that way for me. It wasn't at all, you know, as soon as I put my brain to just conceptualizing that question, it was really easy for me to drum up. I'll ask it to you guys right now at 71307 on the text line. Start your text with the word ESPN, and away you go with your text message. And via the phone lines, 1-844-477-3776, 1-844-GSP-ESPN is the number. What is your worst stadium experience of all time? What made it suck worse than any other experience you've ever had? Now, Lonzo, I do want to throw it to you, and I believe, Lonzo, I don't know if you've had one worse than I think your story about being at Clemson and somebody said they would throw your daughter off the side. I don't want to speak for you, but I think that's the gist of what we're talking about, right?
All right, so I've had enough Clemson for today, so I'm going to talk about another experience.
You had another bad one?
Yeah, I've had several bad experiences.
Really?
And you said stadium, so you weren't specific to sport or level of sport. So I'm going to talk about high school. And may or may not be in this area, was there to watch someone play, went into the restroom, which was nothing more than a glorified outhouse, and saw spiders the size of my hand. And about that time, my daughter, who was there with me, I heard her screaming. Apparently, the spiders that I was seeing was also in a connected, you know how they have the outbuildings that are restrooms for in high schools and other places like that. So they're connected, but they're not.
Are these kind of like the restrooms that you would get at like a public park?
No. Well, yeah, actually, yeah, like that. So, also, the toilet paper had chains on them, so no one would steal it. But when she screamed,
what is it? Was this in a pandemic? Because that's the only toilet paper anybody would steal that I know of.
Well, maybe they knew ahead of time. This was a decade or so ago. But I heard her scream. I went out. She come running out. Could not finish going because of the spiders all over the place. And it may or may not be a place in this area, and who knows, maybe they've cleaned it up since then, but it was definitely a harrowing experience because I've seen big spiders on TV and movies, but this is the first time I've seen them in person, and I don't ever want to do that again.
Well, based on your description, I would say that it may be really in this area.
It may or it may not be.
Where are we talking about here?
I'm not saying.
Just between you and me.
I'm not saying.
Nobody's listening. It's just you and me here talking.
Right, I will now. Say maybe okay. It's maybe a 20-minute drive from here, possibly. Maybe.
Maybe a 20-minute drive.
Maybe.
So it's by Gray Court then?
No. Okay. It's nowhere near Gray Court.
Okay. I'm trying to figure this out.
You know, it might be. How directions work? There's a north, south, east, and west, and there's other stuff, yes.
How about that? But you drive in a certain direction 20
minutes.
Oh, no,
but I went to every one of the games for my children when they played.
Ah.
So I've been all over this area, even though you don't think I've been everywhere. I've been all over this area to all the high schools in this area, plus for a while, I was doing a high school scoreboard show and went to a bunch of stadiums to watch games. So I've been to a ton of the schools in this area.
So what you're saying, Lonzo, is when I rib you about never having been to Falls Park, I should not assume that that means that you haven't been to other places here in the upstate, right?
I've been to, and again, I'm 51 years old. I've been to a lot of places. You're catching me on my downside.
Okay. Folks, here's my worst stadium experience, and I'll give you two. And I want yours as well, all right? Because they hit us in the face, right? Like Lonzo's massive spiders the size of hands in the bathroom, also present in the women's bathroom. I don't know. I don't even understand, Lonzo, how that even happens. Is there a hole where I don't even understand that.
Spiders can climb. You do realize
that. Yeah, I understand, yeah. But is it open air?
Well, most of those, I mean, it has a roof on it, but there's no door, really. It's kind of a, you walk around a corner thing. Just like most, like you were describing a park, some of those parks don't have doors on them. You just walk around a concrete building. You walk inside around a corner, and there are the restrooms.
Interesting. So my worst, I was at the 1986, I'm dating myself, and as an aside, folks, dating yourself is a really fun thing to do. I suggest you take yourself out sometime. But I went to the 1986 playoffs, NLCS, Astros and New York Mets, and I'm in Houston, and I'm 9 years old. And I have never honestly seen violence in my life. Like, I think my dad and I would watch, like, Westerns and stuff and, like, karate movies. But at 9 years, 9 years old, at that time, no internet, right? You hadn't seen violence. And there was a fight right in front of me at the Astros-Mets game. I've never seen anything like that in my life. This Astros fan got the tar beat out of him. His face was purple and a chair was broken in this. And never having seen violence before, man, 9 years old, this guy's face is shredded, looks like hamburger meat. I got to admit to you, man, I was shaken the rest of the game after that. And then the second one, man, the second one is more gross than anything else. But realize, folks, that when you are in the band, as I was at Florida, you don't have the benefit of going down to the bowels of the stadium and avoiding everybody. You don't get to slip through the back door the way that the coaches do and the players do. You're at the concessions with everybody else. You use the restrooms with everybody else. So imagine soft-spoken Mark Ryan at Auburn when Florida's playing at Auburn and I'm in the band. And I go to the restroom, and the restroom was a trough. There was a trough in the restroom. And all of these guys have their business out right in front of you in the trough. And then not only am I facing having to do that, but then these jokers who have had too much to drink, I'm getting my ears are getting flicked. I'm getting elbows to the back because I have this huge Gator uniform all over me and we are kicking their ass. All right. Like we are kicking their ass. It's weird, man. It's weird. But that experience was gross. And I, look, let's make fun of the band guys. Right. But you don't realize that some of the environments that you're in sometimes are not the safest of environments. What is your worst stadium story? What is the worst stadium experience that you have ever had? All right. I would love to know what made it so, what made it jump out to you, what made it so visceral in your memory. We check on Twitter. Michael Stathakis says, not for me, but the guy in front of me went to a WWF type event at Bon Secours downtown and was in the second row. Guy in front of me was heckling a large Samoan wrestler. Samoan guy looked at him and hocked a loogie that landed square in his chest from 25 feet away? What? No way. That can't be true, Michael. Can't be true. Lisa Justice says, worst all-time stadium experience, 1995 World Series, Braves versus Cleveland Game 3. Lopez fouled a ball backwards directly into the seat I was sitting in. My mother saw the trajectory of the ball and yanked me out of my seat and pulled me at her feet. Saved her life. Lisa, I thought you were about to tell me that you were upset that she pulled you out of the way of catching the ball. That's what I thought you were going to tell me. But, hey, you're still here, right? So that's a thumbs up. That is a thumbs up. Your worst stadium experiences, welcome. We want to hear them. What made them so crappy? Lonzo shared with you one of his. I've shared with you two of mine. You are listening to Offsides with Mark and Lonzo. It's right here on ESPN Upstate. All right, let's check and see what you guys are saying. A friend texts me, Mark, when Clemson played in Tampa, there were like four bathrooms for a lot with 5,000 cars. The line was over 200 people long. Everyone was going to the bathrooms in fields and on buildings. And trash everywhere. No one was emptying it. How a professional stadium can be that unprepared blows my mind. I think they're knocking my hometown here. She said it was the national championship, and they still have nightmares over this particular incident. Sorry to laugh at your nightmare. I just can't help myself, man. That's pretty funny. Perhaps it's funny because I know who it is. Let's see here. Mark, I think it's time to get back to the studio because Lonzo needs someone to guard his cornflakes. Jeez Louise. Mark, the competitive balance in college football goes deeper than Power 5 versus everyone else. The sport is broken outside of the NFL. CU, Bama, LSU, Georgia, Ohio State, Clemson, that's it. It's no fun. Why would you go to any game if you're not a fan of those schools? You have no shot at a national championship. Look at the recruiting rankings. The vast majority of high four- and five-star players all go to the same 15 schools. It's all so very predictable. Let's see here. Mark, my worst stadium experience, South Carolina at Clemson 2000. It was so cold, it snowed 3 inches the next day. Really? It snowed 3 inches here in the fall? Anybody else remember that? South Carolina at Clemson 2000? Hurt like hell, he says. John and Greer. What is the temperature at which it becomes painful? And you know exactly what I'm talking about, right? The kind of cold that makes your bones hurt when you go inside, it punches you in the face like Mike Tyson. What is the temperature of pain? That's what I want to figure out with you guys, all right? What is the temperature of pain? Mark, by the way, Clemson cheated that game and got off with a push-off late. They kicked a field goal on the next play and won by one. That's clearly a South Carolina fan that says that. Clemson fans, if you remember Clemson, South Carolina, the Palmetto rivalry in 2000, did Clemson cheat at the end of that game? Is that how you remember it? You guys tell me. You guys tell me. What do you think? By the way, we're still taking in your worst stadium experiences on the text line, 71307. All you have to do is start your text with the word ESPN and away you go. Rachel Mann says, Furman at hated rival Georgia Southern. Georgia Southern fans were awful. Heckled the whole Furman section as I walked through the concourse. Fans were in my face saying all kinds of things. Furman lost a chance of overrated. We were harassed all the way off campus. Alex Deerslapper says, a stadium of people watching me in high school coming in last in the 3,000 meters after getting lapped. Nobody's nerfed. Sorry about that, dear slapper. All right, the top five at five is coming your way next. You're listening to Offsides right here on ESPN Upstate.